Conservative Theological University is offering courses of study leading to your certified AA through PhD, all online. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these three stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted that you've joined us today. Looking forward to your calling in, 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917. We're talking about the issue of the illegal immigration and the fact that we've been told, in fact, Newt Gingrich on television being interviewed by, I believe it was Jesse Waters, used the term when they were talking about the illegal invasion in America and the Islamic jihadists coming in. Of course, they say they don't use the term now, Islamic jihadist, let's face it. They always say the radicalized person. The person been radicalized. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the only radicalization that I find in relationship to the Islamics coming in is the fact that they believe the Quran. I'm looking at some of the surahs out of the Quran. It says in Surah 3151, we shall cast terror into the hearts of all non-Muslims. Surah 2191, and kill all non-Muslims. Wherever you find them, kill them. Such is the recompense of the disbeliever non-Muslim. Surah 2193, fight until there's no more disbelief in Allah. Surah 2216, that is, it says jihad, the holy fighting in Allah's cause, is ordained for every Muslim. Surah 456, those who disbelieve, we shall burn them in fire. Surah 4101, all disbelievers, non-Muslims, are ever in your face as open enemies. Surah 855, the worst thing living creatures before Allah are those who disbelieve in Islam. So, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how you can go any further and wondering what an Islamic is about and what an Islamic jihadist will do if they're believing the Quran, reading the Quran, following what the Quran says. And that's what we're talking about today. Our very special guest is Derby Yola. And Derby, we have talked around it several minutes now. So let me ask you a question. Why should we, as Americans, be against birthright citizenship?
Because it's not what is legal. Let me quickly tell you my steps in becoming a citizen. I came as a tourist, changed the visa to student, then I became a political exile, then a permanent resident, and then a citizen in 1973. We have discussed already the issue or the clause of and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, but I want to say something else. When you are a permanent resident or an illegal resident, you have never disavowed your own country or pledged allegiance to the USA. Mm-hmm. So why should somebody who has no allegiance to us be giving any rights or privileges?
That's right.
Then when you become a citizen, before you become a citizen, you have to pledge, take the oath of citizenship. Mm-hmm. And then you're okay. Plus, I asked a constitutional scholar, can two illegal entities makes produce something legal? No. Well, two illegal residents, legal or illegal, who are not citizens, cannot produce a U.S. citizen, period. One interesting fact, I got my citizenship. I have a citizenship certificate from the U.S. government, and I had it, and then I misplaced it. So I said, that's a very important document. Mm-hmm. I'm going to request for a replacement, a duplicate. So it took me forever to get that. So when I got it, it said, yeah, I was made a citizen in 73, this date, this, that. But now my original certificate, which I later found, said that the certificate was issued the 14th day of December in the year of our Lord, 1973.
How about that?
Now, the replacement certificate didn't have that. Mm. It was issued, period, a date, period, no year of our Lord. So between 73 and 2008, when I got the new one, somebody changed it.
Somebody changed it in the fact that we had stopped recognizing the Lord.
And that we were a Christian nation.
That's right.
Now, what defines a country? Its borders, language, and culture.
Yes.
And culture, and religion is the most important part of any culture. We're a Christian nation, founded on Christian principles. Western European, we speak Western European languages. So immigrants should be selected not for diversity, but for merit. We should select the very best from the world. Who should be a citizen? I want the U.S., the new citizens, the immigrants, to be young, healthy, well-educated, who already speak English, and who already embrace our culture, and who will contribute to our society, not somebody who is going to be a burden for the American taxpayers.
When you say a burden out to the American taxpayers, let's digress for a moment. In Minnesota, we have the largest concentration of Somalians of any place in America. And it's just been discovered that for a number of years now, cumulatively, $1.13 billion has been siphoned through the welfare, Social Security, COVID funds in the state of Minnesota. And the governor there is claiming they didn't know anything about it, but they're going to do something. Tell us what you see when you see the Somalians in Minnesota and other parts of the nation that have colonized and not assimilated. What does that do to a culture? You touched on it a moment ago, but what does that do to a culture? Does it make the culture better, stronger, or weaker? What does it do to a culture when we have those coming in, number one, that's illegal, number two, that might have special temporary status as the Somalians, which Trump, by the way, said he's canceling that. So, well, how should we view that? Tim Walz in Minnesota is saying that we want more Somalians to come in. What do we see that's happening there that's a good illustration of what will be across the nation very soon, lest we recognize the problem and cure the problem?
Well, I believe I want my country to be the U.S., not the U.N.
That's right.
We should be more homogeneous. Mm-hmm. We get along better when everybody's about the same, not in race, but in culture.
Culture.
Well, as I said, the new immigrants should be selected on merit. I want to talk about the early Cubans. They were people with those who came over in 1960-70. They were cream of the crop. They were the best Cuba had to offer. So Miami became a great city because of those Cubans. Mm-hmm. But the Cubans coming today are not the same as those that came over years ago. They are the average, run-of-the-mill Cubans. So we need to bring people who are top class from all over the world. My parents came in 1961, 1 year after we did, and within 3 years, they became homeowners. How about that? Shame on all the Americans who have been on welfare forever and ever.
Well, we just discovered that in the Somalians in Minnesota, I believe it's 97% of them are on some type of welfare and some kind of taxpayer-funded support. In fact, one illustration was used recently by some of the media that were willing to talk about it, that in each of the Somalian homes with sometimes 6, 7, 8 children, each child is drawing a welfare check and a Social Security check and some type benefit. And one of the writers that I followed said that some families, Somalian families, are getting as much as $10,000 a month from the federal government. What do we do with that when you've got a governor that refuses to recognize it, says he wants to embrace more of the Somalians coming in, and we've got others that have the, immigrants coming in, the blue cities and the blue states, that they become safe havens for these illegals coming in. And yet, just as Garcia, that was prosecuted by the federal government and was deported, all of a sudden you had some of our congresspeople in D.C., that were saying that we did not give him the benefit of due process that's called for in the Constitution. Now, my question, Derby, does due process apply to an illegal immigrant coming in to America?
It shouldn't. If you came illegally, you have no rights, period. Now, let me address the issue of welfare and not vetting immigrants. Mm-hmm. That is not new. In fact, Cubans have been coming over also unvetted. Right now in Miami, you have a bunch of pro-Castro Cubans who apply for asylum, get benefits, and that then they move back to Cuba. Mm-hmm. As to the corruption of the Somalis, well, this is similar in a way. In the 1960s, there was a plan called the Alliance for Progress. It was during the Kennedy or Johnson years, I forget. It was a plan to help Latin American countries to develop economically. Well, that plan didn't work. The politicians in the Latin countries kept the money. It never went to the people. So USAID mm-hmm. was being done in the 60s. Isn't that something? Nothing is new. And then there's no vetting either. They are terrorists. Now, the Cubans who came over after the good Cubans came, at least they did not become terrorists. They were just more like criminals and people who didn't obey the law, but very different from the new immigrants from Somalia or other parts of the world. I want to bring up the issue that it was Reagan who signed the amnesty bill in 1986.
Yes.
He also campaigned on doing affirmative action, didn't keep his promise. So Reagan was no great Republican either.
If I can jump in with this, you're exactly right. But here's what happened with the Reagan administration. And I think at that time we had about 5,000 or 5 million, about 5 million illegal immigrants in America. And Reagan wanted to deport them. But he was controlled by a socialist, Marxist, communist, democratic party at the time. So they made a deal. The Democratic Party said, let those remain in, and we will shut the borders, we'll not allow illegals to come in. So Reagan believed the lie of the Socialist, Marxist, Communist, Democratic Party. That's where it came in, that Reagan looked like then was at fault for doing that. But I will go to his defense on that basis, that I know the record with that Reagan was lied to by the Democrats, just as is happening today. Isn't that something?
Yeah, don't ever trust a Democrat or a communist.
That's right.
The issue of immigrants do the jobs Americans won't do.
That's what we hear, yeah.
Yes, well, if you pay a farm worker, let's say, $10 an hour, that's a very low wage. What if we pay them $20 an hour? That doesn't mean that the price of tomatoes will go up double. Mm-hmm. Because one thing is picking the tomato. Another thing is the distribution and sale of the tomatoes. When the farm owner collects the tomatoes, he sends them to Publix, and at Publix, they put it on the shelves Well, all those are American workers. They are paid the same, no matter whether the farm worker was paid $10 or $20. Also, so many immigrants, when they work, they get paid, they send the money back to their country.
Exactly.
So we're wasting dollars, American dollars, going abroad. They should stay here. When Americans work here and sell something, well, the one who produces the good has money to buy other things, pay taxes, and the money recycles itself inside the U.S. But if it is a foreign worker, he's going to send the money out of the country. So that doesn't help anybody.
Exactly right. And one of the things, Derby, I'm looking at an article that says, I want ISIS to kill all of you. Council on American Islamic Relations now considered a terrorist organization in at least one state. I'm going to read a part of the article. The Muslim Brotherhood, a social front for militant jihadists around the world, and CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, have been designated as foreign terrorist and transnational criminal organizations by the state of Texas. CARE actually has been named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation years ago when the group was convicted of funneling millions of the terrorists to of Hamas, according, that's millions of dollars to Hamas, according to the announcement of Governor Abbott, who was named an unindicted co-conspirator in the one of the first and largest successful prosecutions of terrorism financed in America, in American history. That was back in 2006. And they had the false front set up, Holy Land Foundation, where supposedly they were collecting money for people to go to the Holy Land. But it was a front for collecting dollars to send to ISIS and to Hamas and other, international terrorist organizations. They were caught, tried, convicted. By the way, Derby, you're familiar with this, that one man right here in the city that is now part of the Human Relations Commission under this present administration, this present mayor, was one of the unindicted co-conspirators in that Holy Land Foundation debacle, and it was stated here. With this, it says, CARE is subsidiary of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Council on American Islamic Relations, a subsidiary of the Muslim Brotherhood. A federal court eventually found ample evidence to establish that CARE was associated with Hamas. And yet we still have CARE today, still have the Muslim Brotherhood. Trump is now wanting to declare them a terrorist organization. Should that be done? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, if you don't have it, if you do not understand it, I think you're pretty stupid.
Yes.
Well, now, I'd like to bring up one other point, that there are some politicians who want to reform immigration, mm-hmm. to say that if you have been here longer than 5 years and working hard on all that, then maybe we should be nice to you. Well, I say, no. If you have been here for longer than 5 years and you were working, well, you were working by breaking federal law. Mm-hmm. In 1998, Congress passed the Identity Theft and Assumption Deterrence Act. Mm-hmm. That means if you use somebody's Social Security or ID, driver's license, whatever, that's a federal crime. If you do it, Dr. Youngblood, you'll be put in jail.
That's right.
But how come these nice illegals who were working were using a fake Social Security, and they were not put in jail?
Listen, the latest finding is for the Somalians in Wisconsin, with all those family members having 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 children. Listen, they said thousands of them had the identical same Social Security number. No. How does that happen?
Well, don't blame the Somalians or the crooked Cubans. Blame the
system,
the American politicians,
yes.
and the bureaucracy that implements all those anti-American ideas. We also have the RICO Act passed in 1970 that says that, you know, drug dealers, if you buy a home or a yacht with drug money, that could be taken away from you. Well, the illegal alien bought a house with money earned from a job where he used a fake Social Security. let's take that house away from him too.
Absolutely.
So let us invoke the RICO Act. That's very important.
Absolutely. I find it fascinating and yet sad that we see in Texas, Governor Abbott tried to stop the Epic City. You might be familiar with that.
Yes.
A 400, I believe it's 400-acre plot of ground that they're developing a mega major city. The core to that city would be the nation's largest Islamic mosque, and only Muslims would be able to purchase the property or each house. It would then, in the deed, it would have deed restrictions that if the house is ever sold, it would be sold to another Muslim. And now Governor Abbott did, by executive order, he stopped it. But he was overruled by the courts. And then the Attorney General for the state of Texas appealed to the DOJ, the Department of Justice, to intervene and to hold the governor's hands up to stop that process of making a Islamic city in the state of Texas at 330 mosques, 450,000 Muslims. And they have determined, the Muslims, they have determined that they're going to Islamicize the state of Texas. They've already taken a lot of strides to do that in New York, where they've now control about 8 million in the city of New York with an Islamic mayor. And so that's the goal. But the thing that was sad to me was when the DOJ refused to take up the case and continue the prosecution to stop the development of Epic City. Epic City is still being developed today. And then not just that, not just the Islamic jihadists. I read an article just last week in the state of North Carolina. A Hindu temple is being built, and it is said in the article that the temple would be taller than the New York, the major city, major building, the
Empire State or what?
Empire State Building, be taller than Empire State Building, for a temple, Hindu temple, in America. Now, what we're seeing and what I'm saying is that we are destroying the integrity of our nation when we start doing that. And it is, Islam is not a religion. Islam is a system of governance and of power and control. In an Islamic mosque, you do not find just prayer. You find all of their weapons of war. You find all of their strategists and their stratagem to take over and control the city, the state, and the nation that they're in. So I'm concerned about that. And so that brings me to a question that I need to ask. Who should be the new immigrants? How should we make the determination? What should be the stand that we take in relationship to the corruption? Who will do the jobs in America that supposedly Americans won't do? How do we respond to that, Derby?
Well, the law of supply and demand. If you have low wages paid, only not well-prepared people will apply. But if you pay high wages, everybody will apply. So that applies to the tech workers. The big corporations want to use foreign workers for their tech work because they don't want to pay the American worker a full salary. There is a couple of points I want to make here, though. And only a handful of Congress people have said it. We need to stop immigration for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And what we also need is something very controversial, but is history. We need to implement the Spanish Reconquista. For those of you who don't know, in the 15th century, Spain threw out from Spain all the Jews and Muslims. And then that made possible for Columbus to come to the New World and discover the New World. So during the 15th and 16th centuries, Spain became Muslim free. Mm-hmm. Just imagine, what if the King Fernando and Isabel in Spain had not thrown out the Muslims, Spain would be fully Muslim today, and possibly Columbus would not have gotten funded to come and discover the New World. So we need the Reconquista, meaning either you assimilate and become a Christian, or at least don't try to overthrow Christianity.
Yes.
To destroy it. But we should only get the very best people from all over the world.
Amen. That's what Trump has said also, by the way.
Well, you know, like, I like Dinesh D'Souza. He's a great American. But would you rather have 1 million more Dinesh D'Souzas or a million more Melania Trumps. You know, they should be nice and also good looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Derby, I'm reading an article. It's ridiculous, this article says. The top U.S. senator sounds an alarm on real civilization for us. The article reads this way. In the wake of last week's murder of Army Spec Beckstrom, alleged to be killed by an Afghan national led into America by Joe Biden, a top Republican senator sounding the alarm for both legal and illegal immigration policies, calling it a civilization issue for us here in the West, a civilization issue. In other words, he's saying that lest we do something about immigration, we will lose our civilization that we call the United States of America. He goes further. The American people have had enough. It's one of the big reasons they sent President Trump back to the Oval Office. He campaigned on this. So this mass migration we've seen needs to be met with mass deportation. 20 million people came here illegally. There is a flaw in our illegal immigration system, and I think it is the real kind of civilization issue for us here in the West. They're dealing with that in Europe. They're dealing with it with tragic consequences there. And if they get ahead of that in that country, it will be us also. But the left is bent, I think, on the open border policy, and then if you come here illegally, you're never supposed to leave. That's ridiculous, this writer said. So in our closing statements and thoughts, Derby, I'll toss it to you. Give us the final words that you want to say to our listeners today. How should we respond? What should we think? What should we do? How should we pray in relationship to this issue?
I say the more we deport, the better. Message to home, and the really bad ones, don't deport them. Put them in jail working to compensate the victims. And I want America to stay American, not to become the UN. I want the USA, period. America for Americans.
That's right, absolutely. Well, I'll close with this thought, Derby. Headline, the enemy has captured ground, Mandami's Marxist Islamic takeover of New York. Another headline says, President Trump plans to revoke the temporary protected status of all Somalians in America because of their fraud. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's my prayer today that you've listened, that you've heard, that you understand the danger that's looming before our civilization called the United States of America. And we need to pray, keep looking up, and recognize our redemption draweth nigh. Thank you so much for joining us today. Look forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Tune in tonight at 11 for a replay of today's Let's Face the Issues broadcast on WBOB AM 600 and 101.1 FM.
Christian teaching.